Are you sure we can tell this?
Massive fan of Off the Ball.
Ireland is in dreamland.
The All Ireland finals are almost upon us.
There's always good guests on.
Fastest ever seen you run your life.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe at offtheball.com/join.
Highly recommend it.
Hurling on Off the Ball
with Bord Gáis Energy. That's hurling energy, and we've been here for all of it with our energy.
Well, one of the greatest All-Ireland finals we've seen, I think it's fair to say. Those folk watching on BBC Two for the first time may just have peaked with their first ever hurling match. We have Jamesy and Richie Hogan on the way, plus Tommy Rooney is in Ennis for us this evening, along with 30,000 Clare fans, seems to be the word. We'll have lots of reaction from a very happy Clare camp incoming across the show. We will also chat to John Hogan, brilliant golf writer, about the Open after 9 o'clock. Xander Schauffele, all of a sudden, two-time major winner for the guy who couldn't close, if you were talking about him not so long ago. 53106, the text number. You can WhatsApp us 0879 180 180. At Off the Ball is where you'll get us. Michael McCarthy, hello to you.
Hello, Joe.
My voice is bad because I'm sick. Your voice is bad because you were at the match yesterday in a Clare jersey.
No, I think it's part of it. I am also sick.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I was at home watching the Sunday game, Joe, drinking a honey and lemon last night, you know, so no celebrations for me, but I enjoyed what I enjoyed in the stadium. It was a magic day. It's a magic day. It's like, I don't know whether it's better when you win the odd time and your account doesn't, or whether it's like, it's always like this. If you're from Kerry or Dublin and it's like, it's this magical, but like, there is nothing like that moment at the end where you're just like hugging strangers and family and everything else. And yeah, like, I mean, I just don't think there's anything like it, you know?
Oh, what a game.
It was an unbelievable game. It was an unbelievable game. It's hard to appreciate it when you're kind of very much in the sort of rooting interest and you're seeing everything Cork do well as a negative for Clare and everything they do well as a super positive, and not really analysing the Cork side of things and everything like that. But you step away from it, and every now and then you sit back at a match like that and you go, this is actually an unbelievable match here. Like, you know, and if you think they were level at half time, level at full time, level at half time and extra time, and but for a bad miss / referee miss, they'd have been level at the end extra time as well, and you would think that's probably a fair way of looking at things. They were unbelievably close teams, but yet in the match there were so many bursts, you know, like Clare had all these like bursts of scores where they would seemingly win it and then Cork would kind of methodically come back. So even though it was even, they weren't the same on both sides as well, which it just made it for such interesting. And then the last thing I'll say, and then I'll stop hogging the mic and filibustering, is some of the scores yesterday are some of the best I've ever seen in person. Mm. And like Tony Kelly alone, I think he got 1-4. His worst point was pretty good, the one where he intercepted the ball and hit it over the bar. You know, great catch. But his other 1-3 were some of the best scores I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Phenomenal. When Robert Downey scored his first goal, Michael Dogan said, that's the best goal I think
I may
have ever seen. I'm like, man, that's probably like third best from yesterday.
I only saw that obviously with the commentary in retrospect, so I knew what was coming, and I was like, but the line when you're meeting people after was that the best goal ever scored in Crow Park? And then when I hear Dogan say it about a different goal half an hour beforehand, you do have to laugh. But yeah, there was three spectacular goals in the match.
Outrageous. Yeah. Outrageous. And it's funny you say that about your sense of Cork clawing their way back in. So after minute 13, which must have been a bit worrying for you, I dare say. Clare, which is the better team, I felt largely throughout, but it did speak of a certain resilience in Cork that went up in my estimation, because it would have been so easy for them to become a touch dispirited, and then Clare's bench had more of an impact than their bench, and somehow they still kept finding a way. My overwhelming sense on the full-time whistle was very happy for Clare. Look, probably because of you and probably because of just various reasons. Like, you know, happier to see Clare win. But man, did not want to see anyone win with Robbie O'Flynn's shot. I didn't see the pull. in real time. I give the referee a bit of a pass on the pull, but then again, I don't know exactly where he was. Maybe he should have seen it, but I certainly didn't see it in real time. There was just so much going on. It was such a mad moment. But I don't think it was the decisive factor in Robbie O'Flynn missing the strike. I think that's just one of those sickening ones that's going to sit with him for a long time.
Unfortunately,
which is like, awful for him.
And I will say, look, I mean, it's easy for me to come on as a Clare person and say it wasn't a free. It was a free. It absolutely was a free. And like, we had our own incident with that where I was definitely a lot more angry when Clare didn't get a free in the last minute of the Munster final last year, you know, so I do know how that feels. But I do think just watching the match, just the highlights last night and being at it, the ref was letting those kind of things go all day on both sides. And like, you know, it was just, that was how he ref the game. He's got a lot of credit for it because there wasn't a huge amount of frees and it was a...
I think when you come on and say that's maybe the greatest final we've seen, or certainly the greatest in a very long time, that doesn't happen a little bit without a certain type of referee.
Yeah,
I think you have to almost bear that in your mind's eye when you're then moving on to talk about refereeing decisions. Like, certainly the pull on Robbie O'Flynn at the death, certainly the McInerney drop on O'Flynn when he was in on goal was more egregious, because that was one of those moments where you thought, oh, he's in here, McInerney's beaten, and somehow he wasn't in. And you just knew something funny had happened and something...
Yeah, he died.
So you could imagine what a black card at that stage in the game, not alone with the tap over free. And then was it the Colm Malone, the chop down, which then led directly to the Shane Meehan score. And they're big moments. I'd say Clare got the rub of the green with the referee. There's no doubt.
In the big moments, I would say. Yeah, and there's like, again, you look over 70 minutes, but I was kind of in a more slightly Cork area and I did see where they were coming from a lot, I have to say, you know, and there, whereas I met people later on who were probably more in a Clare area who thought like, that was the rub of the green. He gave us nothing the rest of the match. And there was weird frees given against it. Look, I mean, I don't want to focus on the referee like this because it's not fair on him, because again, it was largely kind of an open game and it was very well played. But like, look, I mean, all those decisions you're right about, and I think the last one, more than anything, is just like, black or white, is that a free? Yes. So, ref sees it, he should give it.
Yeah.
You know, and it should be a replay. But again, I just think these things happen over the course of a game, and, you know, I would look at that from a Clare point of view, thinking we should have had the game won twice. Yeah. They're 3 points up very late in normal time, they're 3 points up very late in extra time. You know, that's Cork and their tenacity for coming back into it, fair play to them, but... I did feel like that Clare probably over the 90 minutes just did a little bit more. But then again, final whistle just blows at a random time is another way you could look at it.
No, I thought they were the better team as well. 51% shot conversion in normal time.
Which says everything, I think. But that's their own fault as well. But I think they were getting into positions in open play that they should have put over a lot more scores.
Yeah, it speaks to the balance of play. By the way, Gerard Byrne's putting a big stamp on his presidency, isn't he?
Yeah.
I don't remember... A single thing a single president has said after a single Ireland final.
I do, probably, but more negatively. Whereas I thought Gerard Byrne spoke very, very well yesterday. I thought he spoke a little bit long.
Yeah.
I have to be honest, in the ground, you know, and it's in major criticism of him. But when you're in the ground and you're just waiting for the cup to be lifted and it's late, we've already had extra time, I thought, like, you could cut that in half. You know, as in we're waiting around here. This isn't really about you. It's about the person lifting the cup. But what he said, I thought was,
I'd be very curious
very
to know
spot on.
If he's running any of this by the GAA, or if this is how I feel about what happened in Coolock during the week, or what I feel is happening with migration generally, the conversation about it in this country, and therefore I'm the president, it's my speech, and so I'm
I've
just saying this.
3 years.
I mean, well, obviously we must try and interview him soon, because I mean, anytime he's been in the media lately, he's been brilliant. But if you missed the speech, by the way, just in the midst of the presentation, as Tony Kelly's kind of waiting, you know, I wouldn't mind lifting this thing pretty soon, Charlotte, he says, for those people who are diaspora, who left the country because of war and famine, we thank the countries who took you in and gave you jobs and allowed you to make a new name for yourselves with our native games. And I think it landed in the stadium. Yeah. Most people were very approving of it, but it's just...
I think it landed more on Twitter than it did in the stadium. But
did he get a lot of abuse on Twitter, I presume?
No, possibly. But sorry, what I mean is that was a very much a kind of a bolt when you're at home, whereas you're in the crowd, you're kind of... Again, waiting for the cup to be lifted.
But it wasn't like it was a natural segue. I mean, it was crowbarred in. I want to say this, and I'm saying it when there's a million people watching, and whether it's GAA policy to or not, I'm saying it. fascinating kind of intervention on his part.
While we're talking about the trophy lifts and everything, I have to say, I don't know whether it's I'm getting soft in my old age or what it is, but I could not take my eyes off the Cork players.
When?
I just,
full time?
That's a half an hour. You know, between a long, two long speeches and everything else and waiting around the RTÉ interviewing players on the pitch and everything like that. And they just, there was two or three lads that never got off the ground. They were just lying there, and then the rest of them were kind of trying to man up and stoically face the camera, you know, and stand up and face the speech and everything like that. But I could not take my eyes off them. I felt so, so sorry for them. And I have to say, Pat Ryan, who I thought was amazing in his post-match stuff and just so classy, right? But he kept mentioning that, like, what they've done this year in terms of, like, pride in the jersey and everything like that. And I just couldn't agree with him more, you know what I mean? And that kind of, what we were saying about them kind of continuously coming back and never being beaten, you know, I think that says everything about them. Even Horgan putting over that free when time was basically up, kind of thinking, we'll win this ball and we'll get another chance. You know, a lot of belief in themselves and everything like that.
So, well, definitely in commentary, yeah, they thought, ooh, he's...
I know, yeah. I was delighted when he hit it over, I have to say.
It seems, as by the way, the final one, and then we'll get into the news round, it seems quite a few of the players, when the full-time whistle went, exchanged pleasantries and said to each other, we'll see you in a fortnight. John Conlon and Patrick Horgan were, by all accounts, having a big old conversation about what a game that was, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
After 70 minutes.
When Brendan Bugler came up and said, John, we got extra time here. And John said, I'm really tired and I'm 34, but okay. And he said to Patrick Corgan, see you in a while. So where are you on extra time things? Certainly on RTÉ in the studio afterwards, none of the panellists thought it was the right thing to go to extra time at All-Ireland final stage. Must be rectified next year.
Yeah,
I wouldn't disagree with it. I mean, I thought extra time was amazing and it didn't, you know, the game didn't go to pieces, but certainly players are tired. I've no problem with a replay for All-Ireland final. I guess, you know, they do want to lock the calendar down and give everybody a definite finale, but it is only two counties you're affecting.
Yeah, I understand where they're coming from. And look, I mean, there's something to be said for the fact that they didn't get another 100 quid each off us all, 82,300 people,
yeah,
you know, in for another day.
They're,
and like,
the greediest grab all association when everything's
definitely
really
gone
great
out the window, yeah, because they won't give us a replay for love nor money now, like, you know. But, like, I have to say, just watching it, the feeling in the stadium was this should be a replay.
Okay.
This is BS. It going to extra time. Like, and then you watch the players and you're just thinking, like, I know they go to, they play extra time there other times of the year and all, but there's something, you leave everything out there in an All-Ireland final and they had nothing left, Joe. And they were all gone down with cramps and you could see some of it was on camera, some of it was off camera, and they were just struggling. And Tim O'Matney, Cork midfielder, was, again, I don't know if this was picked up on TV or not, but he was brilliant all day. He was absolutely brilliant because he did a great marking job on Kelly in the first half, but he was chipping in with scores and everything as well. And he was called off and he started walking. The ref told him to hurry on and he started jogging and he could not make. And you know that kind of thing where you stop because you're like 5 yards away and you can walk the rest of the way, and he did it and kind of realised he was still about 20 yards away. And like, you could just, I could just see from 100 yards away the lactic acid. And he just couldn't make it, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't think the players need to be in that state, especially not a load of them.
Mm.
And it does sort of take away from things a little bit, you know?
Okay. Richie, slight delay getting to you this evening. You're there now?
Hello.
Yes. Very well. I presume you, like the BBC Two viewers, were impressed with the fair yesterday?
Do you know what? I think part of Charlotte Burns' speech yesterday was there's an old wrestling instruction where you play to the hard camera. I think he knew that the BBC Two presence there, not just BBC NI, was actually a big thing, and he was probably putting it out there a little bit more that this is open to absolutely everybody, as well as having the kernel of the message borne out in the horrible stuff that's gone on in the past week, particularly up near me here. But yeah, he was utterly fantastic. But the game itself was—it's brilliant to talk about an All Ireland final where we're not worrying about legacies and we're not worrying about, you know, X amount of titles in a row. We're just enthralled by the contest that we've gotten over the course of those 90 minutes or so. It was just absolutely fantastic, and yeah, more of the same next year, please.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's tough to think it's so many months until it all ramps up again. Charlotte Burns, by the way, I think if he wasn't such a compelling, coherent speaker,
it could really fall flat what he's trying to do. But actually, his delivery is
he sticks with world class.
I was thinking, it's like political office waiting for this guy if he wants. You know, no problem.
I did think he was going to go Irish for the whole thing there for the first 30 seconds or so, which I wouldn't have minded. There's something, so I'm not always catching it all, but there's something beautiful about it.
You would have people like me going, speak English for God's sake. So,
where do you think you live, man?
NewsRent is, as ever, with thanks to Optimum Nutrition, the official performance nutrition partners of the GPA. Richie, no surprises, you were starting with the homecoming.
Yeah, more than 30,000 fans are expected to greet the triumphant Clare Hurlers at Tim Smythe Park in Ennis this evening. They brought the Liam McCarthy Cup back to Shannon's side for the first time in 11 years. Clare beat Cork by 329 to 134 after extra time to win the county's fifth All-Ireland title. Shane O'Donnell was among the banner star performers, scoring 2 points, and says he managed all of that yesterday in pretty trying circumstances.
I pulled my hamstring on Tuesday in training, basically, and got a scan Wednesday saying that it was a 1A, which is like the mildest strain you can have. But it was still a kind of like, we're talking 5 days to recover, so it was a pretty 50-50 whether I could play, and even if I was going to be playing, I'd be kind of aware of it. So it all worked out brilliant. Did not hold me back at all yesterday, but earlier in the week it was like, went from the total highs and the dream of building up to an Ireland final to having 24 hours of like post-training where it was like, oh, my hamstrings, it's done. Like, and
mentally, that must be a hard place to be in.
It was, yeah, it's just like your dream turns to genuine nightmare, and it's just like everyone wishing you the best luck is suddenly like reminding you that you're not going to be playing, and it's just so difficult. It was so challenging, and not to at all take away from whoever would have came in for me would have done a fantastic job. I'm not at all concerned about that. It was just the trying to get over that emotion of it. But thankfully I got the MRI and it said it was something I could work with, and physios, Shane Malone and Catra Fahey, were absolutely incredible. I mean, they put in an unbelievable shift on me alone, never mind all the other guys they were tending to as well. Met up outside hours, they met up Saturday morning with them, Joe did everything possibly could do to try and just get me to the place that I could take to the pitch, and then all bets are off then, really, Joe, kind of just see what happens when I go out there.
Jeez, I didn't realise that. That's unbelievable. I mean, talk about on already a very emotionally demanding week.
Yes.
The worry with that. I mean, you could find yourself pitching up at 3:30, and yes, your 1A hamstring has been suitably massaged and iced and treated so that you're going around in the parade, but you could suddenly realise, oh my God, I've no energy. The whole week has been so trying that I'm completely burnt, and yet it was the opposite. I mean, I think, like most of the Clare team, he barely got into it in the first 10, 12, 13, 14 minutes. But then when he did, really, you'd say it was his intervention which turned the tide. I mean, well, I'm curious to see what Richie Hogan thinks later, but I always remember earlier in the year asking Richie Hogan about momentum in hurling, what he thinks momentum hinges on, you know. And he said, I just remember saying, can someone go up and catch a ball and do something? That's what swings a game. And O'Donnell, those kind of several interventions in that goal, and that changed the atmosphere in the stadium. It changed, I think, probably the anxiety levels amongst his teammates. And I think with his next two touches, it was two more points. So I think
that's what I was about to say.
1-2 in the space of 4 or 5 minutes.
Purple patch there that got Clare back into the game. And funny enough, I was going to mention that, which is very important. But then there's also the psychological aspect of losing Shane O'Donnell. I don't think Clare would have won that match yesterday if he wasn't playing. And it's not that they couldn't, it's just that I don't think they would have. And isn't it amazing how rumours get around in a tight-lipped camp? So apparently, since about Thursday, there's been a kind of there was Clare fans muttering, and O'Donnell could be out, could be out. I heard a groin injury, nothing to do with a hamstring. You know, it's all little mistakes. And but I hadn't heard this. Apparently, everybody else had. And then literally leaving, there was just a pub where we met everybody in before the match, and literally leaving, splitting up to go to the stadium. And I just heard, just in passing, my uncle said, Shane Meehan's going to start for Shane O'Donnell. And I just kind of walked by and went, sorry, what? And I hadn't heard the Shane O'Donnell rumour. So I walked up, suddenly everyone filled me in, and I walked up with such trepidation. And when I saw him warming up, I was the happiest man in Croke Park.
He's just a phenomenal player. He really is. We'll talk about him, I suspect, with Jamesy and Richie Hogan after 8 o'clock or so. You have more early news for us, Rich?
Yeah, Darren Gleeson is no longer the manager of the Antrim senior hurlers. The former Tipperary goalkeeper led the Saffrons to a pair of Joe McDonagh Cup titles. They also have remained a Division 1 side since winning promotion under Gleeson in 2020.
Two texts in. So contrasting feelings, I think, Nolan Dunboyne. Don't skip over the refereeing decisions because they, hyphen, not alone, hyphen, cost Cork a replay, but more likely even a victory. And I was rooting for Clare, whereas Ger on Twitter says, I do hope the referee non-calls and mistakes don't overtake the memories of what was a sensational match in a cracking atmosphere.
Like, it's hard for me to say that he changed the outcome, because if the referee gets every decision right over 90 minutes, I don't know what way that affects the game. Like, I can point to, in my head, and I have to watch it back, 6 frees that Clare should have got that they didn't get.
Mm.
Now, none of them were crucial, or they were the normal type of thing that you'd miss in a match. Mm. And then I can think of a load that John Conlon got away with 4 or 5 fouls. Yeah. Conor Lean ran through the back of Hoggy at one stage and Clare got a score from it on the other end. Like, I'm not saying there weren't decisions against Cork. There was the ones you mentioned earlier. I just think, yeah, I'd like to watch it back with a fine tooth comb before you say it changed the result of the game.
Jimmy says, I hear stuff about under-14s doing strength and conditioning, nutrition and GAA, so it doesn't stack up that you should all be against extra time. Squad depth, fitness, etc., huge part of sport. Yesterday, a perfect example of how it's important in team sport. There'd still be a winner and a loser if there was a replay, so why delay it?
Gosh, that's a very unsympathetic view of it, isn't it? They all do S&C, they're fine. If you've seen what they do, and like, it's a big bloody pitch, there's a lot of running in that game, and it's high intensity game all the way through, and that's fine. They can train for 90 minutes and that's grand, but I just feel like more in an All-Ireland final, more than in any other game, you leave it all on the floor, and it's tough to bring yourself back up for another 20 minutes. Like,
I'm not totally against his point. I see where he's coming from. World Cup finals are decided by extra time, sometimes penalties. European championships, obviously more of a logistical issue in, yeah, those tournaments, but
also,
you know,
it
didn't tarnish yesterday for me in any way whatsoever. Like, no part of me is like, oh, it's a pity it went to extra time and it was won that way. If anything, in a way,
it added to the spectacle. I have to say now, like, by the score on the pitch, I didn't think it showed them at their best, whereas we actually had the spectacle of it for the rest of it.
What about his point, though, that an aspect of sport and team sport is
endurance,
your fitness and your endurance, and you think of Jamie Carragher going down with cramp and clearing another cross in 05, and that's actually, in a kind of macabre way, the part of the test, you know, and actually Clare's strength off the bench. Look at Clare's bench yesterday. Like, their bench, you could argue, trumped Cork's. What a big part of the year that is. All the training that the 26, the 30, the 35 were doing. I thought
that given we have a replay in the calendar once a year in hurling, once a year in football, that, you know, there's also the aspect of a replay being a big part of the tradition of the game in some way. And it only exists in the final level, and that's fine. It's for loads of different reasons. So, you know,
I thought instead of
pushing them that extra level, which I agree is part of the test, that's fine. But,
you know, I'm not outraged
by it. I think it's fine.
The calendar allows for a replay because yesterday wouldn't have gone to penalties.
Yeah.
So if the allowance is there for a replay, then maybe just call it normal time. I can live with that. But again, I'm like, yeah, you know, I sort of see where Jimmy's coming from.
Yeah.
Rich, sorry, you were coming in.
Yeah, this idea that started floating around halfway through the game, pretty much, that, oh, it'd be great if we just got a replay out of this. It's like, yeah, it would, as long as it ends level and, like, properly ends level. The idea that we're just, you know, let them at it again, like, somebody has to lose and somebody will lose. Like, that's the basic tenet of every sporting endeavour that there is. I don't know what the idea was to delay it, to delay someone losing, because, you know, sport's not fair for 50% of the people taking part, and maybe even more. So, time to get over it.
All right, Jimmy's managed to completely change 2/3 of our opinion here with one single text. And maybe that just speaks to the fact that I don't feel that strongly about it either way.
Yeah.
But definitely the feeling, even the RT panel, the 3 lads sitting there were like, God, leave it now, we're done, that was beautiful, it was great.
3 lads who
would
have played in all Ireland finals, you probably know what you feel at the end of it. And like, I know, even just sitting in the stand, like, when your attention is on your, like, Fitbit showing you at 135 or whatever, just from sitting there, and you're like, you're like, I can't take much more of this, you know, and you're just, I'm literally just standing and sitting.
I'd say you're a relieved man not to have to go on the hunt for tickets again, though. All that business.
They're a bit easier for the replay, Joe.
Is that right?
Usually, yeah.
Okay.
You don't have the, I don't think you have the,
the pesky diaspora.
You don't have the, yeah, the diaspora can't come twice. And you don't have the countrywide club tickets, I think. As far as I remember from 2013.
Right.
You don't have the tickets to every club in the country for a replay.
Right, okay. Rich, you're going to the golf next?
Yeah, Xander Schauffele's Open Championship win has seen him move up to second in the latest official world golf rankings. The American carded a final round 65, finished two shots clear of Justin Rose and Billy Horschel. Schauffele moves up one place above Rory McIlroy, who of course failed to make the cut at Troon. Scotty Scheffler remains the world's top golfer. Shane Lowry is up six places to 26th in the world after yesterday's 68 saw him finish sixth at Troon, collecting a cheque of just over €560,000. Despite being in a winning position on Saturday morning, Lowry looks back on the week positively.
How could you not look back on it positively? Like, you know, I had a chance to win another Open. Look, obviously, you know, the critics and so whatnot will say that I probably should have won from where I was yesterday afternoon, but it's not easy out there. It's not easy to win tournaments like this. And, you know, I did everything I could. Unfortunately, I came up short. You know, hopefully, over the next 5 to 10 years, I give myself another few chances in tournaments like this, and get one more. Like I said at the start of the week, all I wanted was one more.
Should you won it, Joe? From 8 under the 8th on Saturday?
No, that was still too early. I mean, 1 to 7 on Saturday, he was serene and hit every green in regulation and had a fair look at a few birdies. None of them dropped. Would have been interesting to see if one or two had. And then he got to the 8th, the postage stamp, 110 yards, and just pulled tee shot a fraction, and that's all you need to pull it by, and you're in a deathly bunker, and he made double. And so that is a scrambly moment, you know, things get very fast, and oh my God, I've just brought the rest of the field back into this, and then suddenly the weather conditions land. And so I suppose what struck me on Saturday was that Billy Horschel, in his t-shirt, Justin Rose, they were playing together. They were like embracing the challenge and almost exhilarated by it, because the tournament had just come back to them all of a sudden with Larry's mistakes. Mm. Whereas he's dealing with, God, I've just got sick of myself a little bit here. And now these conditions are coming in. I'm hanging on for dear life. And
yeah, choking with your man chain smoking beside him.
Yeah. So then, and look, it was, I think Sunday he went into 3 shots back, but so much traffic ahead of him, it was always going to be a very, very tall order. Like, what really deserted him on Saturday as well was the putter. He was, I think, 87th of 90th in the field.
And funny
third
enough,
last.
Even on 8, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking, you can get yourself in trouble. You hit a nice shot. You have about 8 foot for bogey. You have to make that putt. I think, you know, you go from there, and it was just, he just kept missing them after that.
The weather was horrendous.
It was awful.
I mean, they were, if you didn't see it on Saturday.
He hit driver into a par four and didn't make it.
We used to do a thing at my old golf club, like Black Sundays it was called, because the black tees were the pro tees. So they put it on maybe once a month. And it was like us playing Black Sunday, whereby you hit your best drive, your best 3 wood, and you have about 100 yards into the green. And it was just like that for all these pros on links, you know? So it was like, I mean, really, really, really tough. And Xander Schauffele was phenomenal.
Oh yeah, we shouldn't overlook him, I suppose. You know, 2 majors in a year and contending every week like now as well.
Yeah, he's gone from nearly man to now serial winner. John Hogan's brilliant golf writer. He's going to join us after 9 o'clock to chat about the Open. Shamrock Rovers, not the easiest of draws. Not easy.
Yeah, it's not an easy week ahead of them regardless, but they've learned the two routes that potentially await them in Europe. Should they lose their Champions League qualifier with Sparta Prague, they'll face either Celje of Slovenia or Slovan Bratislava in the third qualifying round of the Europa League. Beat Sparta, and it's either Romania's FCSB, formerly Steaua Bucharest, or Robbie Keane's former club, Maccabi Tel Aviv. Rovers boss Stephen Bradley says they've done their homework on the Czech champions.
Yeah, we've obviously watched them in great detail. But like I said, I think you know them quite well, because they're a really top team that operate at a high level. So they're very, very good at what they do. We know that. They have a lot of international players. We know that. But it's 11v11 on the pitch, and we'll do everything possible in Tallaght to go and try and win the game.
Sorry, Steaua Bucharest are now not called Steaua Bucharest.
That's been the case for at least 5 years, I think. Yeah.
Well, that's a bad move. Why would you give up being Steaua Bucharest?
But they were... Because technically, the business that was Steaua Bucharest was forced under due to financial.
They're like Sevco.
Yeah, pretty much. They're the Romanian Sevco. So they are the reborn entity that used to be at one stage Steaua Bucharest.
Well, Cork City got their name back, didn't they?
Imagine,
imagine, who are we playing? We're playing FCSB.
Oh, they're from Romania. Sounds handy.
Yeah. What do you think the SB stands for, though, to be fair?
I know, but then, so yeah. I mean, if they're leaving an SB, just call yourself Steaua Bucharest and let's not throw an F in a
C
before.
And we will from now on, Joe.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Now that we know who they are.
It's a disgraceful situation. We're out of time. We're going to go to Ennis and check in on some happy Clare folk. Richie McCormack, thank you.
Nice, lads.
Michael, thank you.
Thanks.
News Talk's Summer Cash Machine.
Okay, we have a big rollover. If you've entered since Friday the 12th of July, which is going back a bit now, then you're still into win, but you need to know the new number. And the new number is €200,000 exactly. So €200,000 up for grabs. Text PLAY to 57557. Get your entry in by 3 o'clock on Friday this week if you haven't entered already. And if your phone rings, usual deal, answer within 5 rings, give us the exact amount, which again is €200,000 exactly. Over 18s only, text costs €2.50. You're playing across the Go Loud Network stations. Terms and conditions as ever on newstalk.com.
Hurling on Off the Ball
with Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
They're going well at the moment. David Fitzgerald is one of those players. He races through the centre. Again, will he get an opportunity? He sends it out. Tony Kelly racing through. Oh, Kelly is still going through. Will he get one to strike it? Oh! Could be a huge moment. What a goal for Clare. What a goal by Tony Kelly. And what a moment. We'll watch it again, Tommy, just for the moment. Kelly got it once, put it on the stick, danced inside, tapped it up, now tapped it in. What a super goal. It's Clare, 3 goals and 15 points.
Cup to 18. Maradona scored in a World Cup final.
Absolutely superb goal, Tony Kelly.
Maybe a personal point of view or a selfish point of view, I suppose it's the best thing I'll probably ever do in hurling. And there's obviously a bit of luck involved because you have to be asked to captain. You have to be asked to captain the team first of all, and then obviously you have to have a team good enough and a panel good enough to win All Ireland. And yeah, from a personal point of view, it's the greatest thing I'll ever do in GAA.
Patrick Collins is coming now. Patrick Collins is the man. He's going to land this one in around the square at the moment.
Who is up?
A clear lead by a single point here, and again it's going to be one of those moments. Patrick Collins will land it on the 13 metre line. It won't go all the distance. It's going a long, long, long way. It's on the 13 metre line. Up they go for it. It comes inside to Robbie O'Flynn. He sends it in and he sends it wide. He sends it wide. He won the ball in front of the goal and he sends it wide. And
the goal over!
It's all over! And Clare and the All-Ireland hurling champions. What a moment! What an evening! What an occasion in Croke Park here at the moment. And they're down on the field. Once again, what a superb moment. Brian Lohan with his hands in the air like we haven't seen him. He's up on the shoulders of the players. Down here, the players are lying on the field. It's one of those moments we will not forget for a long time.
This Clare team has been maligned for 3 or 4 years for being nearly there and for knocking on the door. Well, today tomorrow night, and we're going to have some hell of a party off the banner!
They go, Cyril O'Connor and former Clare hurler Tommy Guilfoyle on commentary for Clare FM. Having a good day, I think it's fair to say. Amazing moment for those guys who are there for every league match, all the way through the championship, and then get a day like that. And of course we heard from Tony Kelly on the steps of the Hogan stand as well. Mick's still here in studio. So the team at the moment have already stopped off in Shannon, Brian Lowen's hometown, and now they're en route to Ennis. Tommy Rooney is tracking them, stalking them. He has spoken to Adam Hogan, David Reedy, David Sherrill, Conor Lean. We're going to bring you those interviews across the course of the show. Obviously an amazing atmosphere in Ennis this evening. 30,000 Clare fans expected to come out to welcome home the team. Just to, before we get to Richie Hogan and Jamesy O'Connor later on, give you a sense of some of the post-match reaction from the camp. So Brian Lohan was on the breakfast show this morning. Now, one of the images which was so memorable yesterday, and I think actually will become more and more impactful in the days ahead and in Clare folklore going forward, was the embrace between Lohan and Gerlach Nan at full time. So Brian Lohan was on with Jerry Nathan this morning from the team hotel. Naturally enough, that came up.
After the game yesterday, who did you look for? Who were you trying to get to speak to? What was the moment that you're going to remember from the aftermath last night?
I was looking for my wife, actually, but I couldn't see her. And the kids, obviously was looking out for Ger. Ger was there. Tony Constantine was there. You know, it was just brilliant to meet them afterwards. And, you know, obviously meeting all the players and you know, spending a bit of time with the players last night was just brilliant.
The photo of yourself and Jer is going to be, I think, an iconic photo out of this. Would you have spoken much over the last couple of weeks in the build-up? Would you have been on the phone just keeping in touch, getting a bit of advice?
No, just text messages. Yeah, just text messages. So I'd always get a text from Jer after a game. And occasionally he could be in Shannon and he'd drop into the office. It's really great meeting him. He's as brilliant a character off the field or off the airwaves as what you see on the airwaves.
Yeah, I bet he is. Amazing photo. What a generational point there. When Nathan asked him, would you be on the phone to Loch Nan? It didn't even occur to me that he was implying, like, actually talking to him on the phone. So it's long as, oh, no, just text messages. In my word, that means
you have an hour long chat. Yeah, like, you know,
that means you have been on the phone nonstop. So, I mean, a great photo.
It was
really
a great photo.
Really great for Gerlach Nan to be there. And obviously, look, their relationship, I'm sure, is deep. So, Tony Kelly, afterwards, you may have seen, was talking about Brian Lohan as well, being God. In the religion of Clare Hurling. I don't know, does that make Tony Jesus or John the Baptist, certainly? Somebody big. Well, Kelly was asked about that in the press conference afterwards, talking to Tommy in the press conference, just about what Lohan has done here in these 5 years.
Since he came in, it has been... Everton has been for the betterment of Clare from a behind-the-scenes standpoint. Like, we were probably in the media pre-COVID for not having our shit together. Our centre of excellence was always on it. We were never on it for an unbelievable match or performance. It was always what's going on in Clare or who's wrong with who. But since he came in, he cleaned up Everton behind the scenes, and then from a player's point of view, he just has us eaten out of the palm of his hand. It's probably because he played and he was such a legend, he has that, I suppose, the minute he walks into the dressing room. But he probably comes across as, like, he is tough and he comes across in the media, but to us, he would defend you to the hilt. Like, he is tough, but he's a sound man as well behind it all, if you can believe that. He has a softer side to him, but he has, he's just a legend.
I thought that was actually an important bit of context at the start, because there's a lot of conversations, even within Clare, I suppose, about Brian in terms of on-field performance and everything like that. And against Kilkenny last year, there was some questionable, I suppose, tactical decisions that, you know, Clare threw off at half-time and ultimately were nearly the better team in the second half, but they'd left themselves too much to do. And every time I've brought it up with certain people, it's been dismissed because it's so secondary to what he's actually done for the group and the county in general. And that is, like, a lot of county board wounds, for example, and issues within there that have disappeared, and they've done so because of the work Brian Lowton has done, as well as the people involved as well, like, you know, who deserve credit. There's the refurbishment of the training ground. There's Club Clare has been started up in that time where people, you know, there was no fundraising whatsoever, and they were at a complete disadvantage to other counties. And I'm not just talking through benefactors, I'm talking through fundraising. All of this stuff was non-existent in Clare, and Kelly is right in what he's saying. There was a very much of a sense of a mess, you know, when people kind of looked in at it. And I think we even did a couple of pieces here on just like, you know, what's going on in Clare Hurling, crisis in Clare Hurling, that kind of thing, you know. And it took someone of Lowen's stature and his character, both of those equally important, I would say, to come in. And then that stature and character also then builds the group of players and the wide panel and people being happy with their roles. You know, like Ian Galvin is arguably a starter on a lot of teams, but he's come off and he's been a super sub for Clare this year, and he's embraced that, and he's come on and scored in every game, you know, and he was very good in extra time, I thought, particularly yesterday. So, you know, I think that was very well articulated, I think, by Kelly as to what actually Lowton has done for this group.
Yeah. Well, that is very interesting. I remember when I interviewed Shane O'Donnell in Ennis at the start of the year, and I was sort of saying, you don't seem to be playing at the moment. What's all that about? And he goes, yeah, well, I work in Dublin. I'm in Dublin. To be up and down to Ennis, just, you know, not really for me. So Brian just gives it to me off, just says, listen, come, you know, March, April time, get yourself right, get going. And I do remember thinking, maybe you're worried about stature and personality and confidence in himself and maybe experience of being a player and the intelligence to read that somebody like O'Donnell is a character you could trust to get himself right. That struck me as very promising. I think a lesser manager might have said, no, one for all, you're down here from January in the muck, I don't care how you get down, like everybody else, that's how this team runs, blah, 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 blah. One size fits all. And I guess maybe that speaks to what Kelly's talking about, where Lowen is this teak tough exterior, doesn't give much away in the media, and yet inside there's an empathy, there's an understanding. There are actually quite an impressive array of soft skills. And that speaks to your point about managing what was a messy situation at the county board, managing someone like Shane O'Donnell, managing someone like Galvin. So I guess that's all worth bearing in mind when somebody starts moaning about it being slow to make a substitute.
Absolutely, yeah, because it's you really realise when you have this big conversation how much it is only one aspect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, stalking Brian Lowen and his band of merry men is Tommy Rooney. He's pulled over on the side of the road somewhere. I hope you pulled over, Tommy.
I have, Joe. How are you? Hey, Mick. I
wasn't sure if you were chauffeur-driven these days, but no, you do look to be driving yourself.
Oh, I am, of course. Yeah, this car surpassed the 150,000-kilometre mark there on the way home last night from...
Just this weekend?
To Ennis. I'd say I bought it, it had 115, so that shows you what my last few months have been like.
Well, listen, you get inter-county mileage from Newstalk, I hope.
I hope so. You said stalking there, Joe.
Yeah.
I actually was on the Clare bus for a couple of minutes. I was trying to get a couple of the lads to do something before they left for Clare Castle.
Did they know you were on the bus?
They let me on. Tommy Corbett, the selector, welcomed me on, so okay. That was nice of
okay,
them.
Okay, nice.
And, I slipped off quietly with David Reedy and Conor Lean, so you'll hear from them in a couple of minutes. And then they had to move a Corolla that had parked in the wrong spot, so they were waiting a little while to get it. And once they moved it, the boys started banging on the bus. They were keen to get to Clare Castle. They're switching over at the minute to an open top bus, and then it'll be heading into the Fair Green in Ennis. So, but let's just linger for a second on the reception in Shannon in Wolf Tones. I really enjoyed the chat that he had there about what Tony Kelly was saying, because I did ask him what he meant when he described him as God, because it wasn't just a throwaway comment, because hurling is like a religion in Clare, and there was meaning behind it. And I think you just have to listen to Kelly's words and pick up on a little bit of what Mick is saying there in terms of what Brian Lowen has done since he's taken charge. And I will add in a couple of other names, Deirdre Murphy, who is the head of operations in Clare. Like, that's somebody who you don't see in the headlines very often. It's somebody that, you know, I've actually asked her to do a couple of pieces over the last year, and she'll just quietly, politely say, not interested. But I know what work she's doing in the background. Kieran Keating and the chairman there, all the backroom team, Deirdre Chaplin as well. Like, there's a really, really strong strong, cohesive unit there that are making things tick in Clare. You mentioned Club Clare. It's actually nice living in the county and getting to see all these little people that are pulling strings in the background and doing things for the betterment of Clare Hurling. And that came to a head last night. It very nearly didn't. It very nearly didn't go their way. But for Brian Lohan to stand there and his mum and his dad and his brothers and sisters and all his club people in Woolton's and Shannon chanting his name, he doesn't look like somebody who, you know, takes the plaudits too well. But he gave a good fist pump and he lifted Liam McCarthy and he let the cheers come on. So,
tell us more about this, Tom. Obviously, Brian Lohan is from Shannon, Woolton's his home club. So presumably they went into the GAA ground and there was a crowd there to greet him. Did he come in bus and get off the bus, that kind of a scene?
Yeah, so I actually recorded the entire kind of walk-in, so we might put that up a little later on. So basically there's three players from Woolton's on the team. So there's a Darrell Owen, Aaron Shanahan, and Rory Hayes as well. And I got that right, Mike, didn't I? It's Rory Hayes.
Yeah. I'd say Aaron Shanahan is a touch relieved, is he? Giving away that free?
I think so.
Two frees.
I think so, Joe, yeah. We might let that one slide. But I think so. But anyways, 4 o'clock, they were due to land. And I said, lovely, I'll go over to Shannon early and I'll be there. And I just knew rightly there was no chance they were getting there. They actually slipped over to Dirty Nelly's in Bunratty for a meal at about 5 o'clock. So we got word that they'd be coming from Bunratty over. The crowds were there from the second I got there, 3:45. They had music playing. They had a really nice setup. The rain came down, some almighty showers. But everyone had, the umbrellas just appeared out of nowhere. People were ready to rock. They were waiting. They were singing Free From Desire about 6 different times. I managed to catch up with Breed Lohan, Brian's mum, for a lovely little chat. We popped into the office in the clubhouse and we had a nice chat. And even the way Breed spoke about Dara coming on yesterday for Conor Cleary. And she said, did you notice him going into the full back line wearing the red helmet? And she started into a story about Brian getting the red helmet in 95. And it was his sister, actually, who was Dara's mum, who gave him that red helmet as a present. And just even listening to Breed talk about the fact that she's now watching her grandson go in there with her son on the sideline was just a really nice moment. And as we were chatting down, we got word that the lads were coming closer. We went outside, the kids going crazy. Like, some counties are well used to these homecomings. Clare people, it's their fifth ever time winning in All-Ireland. And as Tony Kelly said, hurling is like a religion. It's actually, it beggars belief that it's only 5 times it's happened. And in the last 30 years, they've had 4. It's unbelievable. So they are absolutely enjoying this. As the lads left on the bus, I came upon 4 or 5 kids from Newmarket on Fergus who were reenacting Tony Kelly's goal at one stage, and then they started reenacting Mark Rogers' goal, and I grabbed them for a wee chat there. So they're looking up to their heroes. I caught Adam Hogan. Adam Hogan told me about being 10 years old when they won in 2013 and being in the Fair Green and looking up, and there was a brilliant photo on Up for the Match when they did a feature from Fecal of Adam Hogan and David McInerney, and we said we'd reenact that later on with a chat in Ennis when I catch up with them later. So that was Adam Hogan at 10 years old, and David McInerney must have been 21 or 2 back then, maybe even 20. And then at the weekend, 11 years on, Adam Hogan lining out at number 2 and David McInerney number 7. So it's nice, really nice being around this team. They're a really nice bunch of people, I would say. They're all in really good form. They're all happy to chat. They're all happy to luxuriate in their success as well, which I think is so important. And it's actually really nice to be able to cover something like that.
Yeah, for sure. You get a brief sense of how their lives are also intertwined. Bonus points if you can tell me when they won their first.
19-14.
Oh.
Who did they beat in the final, Tommy?
Having a clue, Mick.
Leash.
Julie, wow. He was almost the honorary Clare man, almost there. Leash, Tommy. Who could forget it was Leash? Come on, Tommy.
It's only 110 years ago, Tommy, for God's sake.
Well, listen, we're going to let you go. We're going to play a few more clips from the press conference. So, Ennis is happening as we speak, or they're en route?
No, I wouldn't say they're there yet. The way that bus has been moving, I'd say there won't be an Ennis until about 8:45. And it's going to be an open top bus, so I'm hoping to capture a bit of that. And we'll be publishing all those interviews later on and off the ball. I think you'll enjoy some of them. Tommy Walsh yesterday, it was actually such a treat, Joe, actually, talking to Tommy in that half an hour before the game. And he had that monologue ready for when the teams took off behind the Airtame band. I think we're actually going to release that later on, the kind of build up with Tommy Walsh yesterday. I swear to God, the hairs on the back of my neck. It actually sustained me on the drive home last night, listening to Tommy Walsh talking about the players. He described Adam Hogan as the snarliest cornerback there's ever been. And I asked Hogan about that, and he gave a great answer about playing with an edge. So I think you'll enjoy that later on.
Okay. Very good. Tommy Rooney, safe driving. Thank you very much.
Come on, lad. See you in a bit.
Cheers, Tommy.
Good man. As an aside, Tommy Welch on yesterday. Well, when I first spoke to him, I said, well, how are things? And he's like, listen, I'm great. I've just been buoyed by a video I've just seen. My great aunt is 92 and I've just got the video. She was meant to do it yesterday, but the weather didn't comply. It's for charity. She's just done a skydive.
The Walters are made of different stuff.
He said, because I always, 92, skydive. And he said, oh, she's a fresh woman. So I bet she is.
He's some man. I heard his post-match chat with Tommy yesterday, so I listened to it this morning. So he's a great man.
Kathleen Sinclair, I wrote down her name.
There you go.
Kathleen Sinclair, if you're listening, 92 years of age. She's from Donegal. She's Tommy Walsh's great aunt. She did a skydive yesterday because she meant to do it Saturday and the weather didn't, you know, she couldn't. So Kathleen Sinclair, 92 years old, did a skydive for charity yesterday.
Congratulations, Kathleen.
He was saying she got videos from everyone. The most prized video. Donegal figure, big sports fan, but it wasn't all just sports people. She got them from lots of people. Who would you think the best video was from to wish her well?
Shay Given?
Daniel O'Donnell.
Oh, of course. Sorry, Jesus. What was I thinking?
I think Shay probably sent a video as well, but I mean, Daniel's. So congrats to her.
Seamus Coleman, anyway.
We're out of time. Richie Hogan and James O'Connor waiting in the wings.
Are you sure we can tell this?
Massive fan of Off the Ball.
Ireland is in dreamland.
The All Ireland finals are almost upon us.
There's always good guests on.
Fastest ever seen you run in your life.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe at offtheball.com/join.
Highly recommend it.